Something wicked is coming this way, and only fools are ignoring the signs. So it's time you became a financial prepper like thousands of others. Gold can travel anywhere. It's international. It's its own currency. Allocate to gold now, the timeless safe haven asset. Open an IRA with Noble Gold Investments to physically hold coins and bars, and let real, tangible gold, not just paper, save your portfolio as the economy burns again. Right now, Noble Gold Investments offers a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin with every qualified IRA. Just use the promo code GOLD to claim your free coin and secure your family's financial future. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com now. NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Red Pill News Live. Big shout out to Muffingate69 says, good day to you and Lisa. Good day to you as well, sir. Thank you very much for that kind donation. I really appreciate it. And as always, I love the name. Love the name. All right, guys, as you can see from the thumbnail, it is a bad day to be a Boeing whistleblower. Last night, while Brad and I were live on the air, Altered State over there on Badlands Media, we started having a conversation about the Boeing whistleblower who was found suicided in his car about 2 months ago. I did a quick search. Come to find out, while we're live, it's being reported that yet another Boeing whistleblower has also died under mysterious circumstances. Now, once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, three times is a pattern. There's a number of other whistleblowers that might end up dead before this is all said and done. But two whistleblowers dead in 2 months? Man, that is just a little bit too close for comfort. So we have a lot to talk about. Also, the Fourth PSYOP group put out yet another video about 11 hours ago. This one's a little bit longer. So do me a favor, if you're here for the first time, hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, sit back, relax, grab your popcorn, because we're going to be right back after this. So just like groceries and gas, your energy bills are expected to keep hitting record highs in the coming months. And despite the fact that most Americans are behind on their utility bills, costs continue to rise by as much as 60% compared to previous years. It's gotten to a point where it's so bad there are some power companies that have a shocking $13 million in uncollected bills because the average person simply cannot afford the price of today's electricity. And the costs show no signs of slowing down. This is why tens of thousands of people are starting to use this magical little device to help slash their power bills and beat the greedy utility companies. The device is a compact, energy-saving device that helps reduce energy bills and optimizes a home's power usage. It's designed to stop your home from wasting unnecessary energy, reduce your home's electricity usage, extend the lifespan of appliances, ensure a consistent and safe flow of electricity to your home, and so much more. Simply plug it into the wall outlet and the cost savings begin. The first month alone is going to pay for the device itself. You can experience this incredible cost savings device at an exclusive 65% off by going to don'twastepower.com. Plus, you're going to get a risk-free full 60-day trial through their safe and secure website. Don't miss out on this incredible offer to save 65% off and get free shipping today at don'twastepower.com. Once again, that's don'twastepower.com, and when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right, gang, welcome back. Thank you much, everybody. Appreciate you hanging out with us tonight. Lisa is actually out running errands. My daughter and her friend are coming this weekend, and so she's out getting a couple of provisions that we're going to need because we're going to have company. We're going to be hanging out, and I'm going to be showing her the sights here in Florida. Not the first time she's been here, but
It's still going to be a good time. So let me also say thank you to NetFolks1 for dropping a can. AskWatch48, who says, working and lurking. Always a good day when Red Pill 78 is on. So that means every single day you're having a good day. Ohio Kimmy, thank you very much for the cookie. Boys Blanc, thank you for the cookie. And Paul Thaddeus, thank you very much for the cookie as well. You guys are awesome. I appreciate you hanging out with us. As I said, we have so much to talk about. I want to begin today by taking a close look at this latest fourth PSYOPs group video. So let's go ahead and transition to this view, and let's take a look. Let me make sure the audio is up. Yes, it is. Here we go. Well, maybe I need to refresh.
People in the world who really don't understand. Freedom has many difficulties, but we have never had to put a wall up to keep our people in. Freedom is indivisible, and when one man is enslaved, all are not free.
Modern war has become a struggle for men's minds as well as for their bodies. Today we face an enemy who spends enormous sums of money and manpower all over the globe in an attempt to subvert the thinking of the people of the free world, to confuse, to divide, and ultimately to subjugate.
It is a contest unlike any we have ever faced in our history as a nation.
Contest for the minds and hearts of people around the world. All people.
When power corrupts, poetry cleanses. We must never forget that art is not a form of propaganda. It is a form of truth.
Psychologists find that control of emotions can be gained by understanding the stimulus-response pattern.
Many everyday things become associated with these primary stimuli, partly by a process called conditioning.
It's a strange, shadowy world, the doctored photograph, the misquotation, the insinuation, and the lie.
I think of fire in connection with emotion.
Cause, effect.
You've got to get a hold of yourself.
We have to work together. You have to help.
Where lied our country and all who serve it? And the glow from that fire can truly light the world.
This is freaking
sweet. Yes, in modern warfare, our military leaders are finding that words and ideas are highly effective weapons.
Wow. Wow, that was good. Oh, man. Did anybody else feel like that was a video exclusively made for Anons? Because that's what it seemed like when I was watching him. Obviously, touching on a lot of different themes that we've spoken about over the years, thought it was interesting that the only country specifically that it made reference to was China. I mean, obviously, it showed the Chinese yuan. It showed the shipping containers. We know that China has made major inroads with the Belt and Road Initiative, getting into our shipping and control here in the United States. I mean, Obama handed over control of a bunch of ports. President Trump took that back. The apartment buildings that they were showing, those looked like apartments in a large Chinese metropolis. And then, of course, you've got the chess reference, the watch reference. You've got JFK. And when it's discussing the idea of oppression and the control of men's minds, I mean, that certainly feels like what we are seeing and what has basically given rise to us and our movement here in the United States of America. Very exciting. And, you know, and I go back to a comment I made the other day because, you know, it's just, it's such a unique perspective to get because special forces and operators like this, the fourth PSYOPs, I mean, they don't normally do recruiting videos, but that's clearly what these are doing. You know, it kind of started out with just as a little tease, but, you know, now they're openly calling for people to come and join and become part of that, that very elite group of operators. And, I wonder how successful it's going to be. You know, how much of it is actually recruiting and how much of it is just signals, to let us know that they're out there. So very, very interesting. I really like that. I think that's really awesome. All right. So let me tell you what, guys, I'll share the link out there. And if you want to go ahead and pour through, that video and maybe, you know, see how many references you can find in there, I think that'll be a lot of fun. I haven't had the opportunity to do it myself, but, it's definitely something I'm going to be doing later. I just wanted to make sure that we got a chance to share it with you here. The broadcast has not started. What are you talking about, Twitter? I'm live. Okay, there we go. All right. So continuing on with the next story. Let me get this pulled up. Do you guys remember a couple of years ago when I was supposed to interview Dan Rodemer? Dan Rodemer was a candidate for Congress in Texas, and he had these crazy ads. Let me actually show you one of them. Because, I mean, it was... hang on. Hold on. Dan, I'm going to have to go to YouTube real quick. Because his ads were hilarious in Texas. And I think he was like a former WWF wrestler or something like that. Dan Rodemer. Here we go. Here's his congressional. Ah, shoot. Come on. Come on. Go back. Dan Rodemer. Boom. Here's his congressional account. Ah, here we go.
Three dirtiest jobs in the world. Professional wrestling.
Yeah, this is from 3 years ago.
Three dirtiest jobs in the world. Professional wrestling. Politician. And bull riding. Let's go, boys.
We call that bull Nancy Pelosi. The beast.
Now that's Texas tough, baby. Two out of three dirty jobs done. I'm Big Dan Rodemer. Texas has big problems. We need a big fighter to solve those problems. The communists in D.C. are ruining America. We have a big problem. Texas, send Big Dan to Congress. I know how to handle Nancy Pelosi and stop her bull****. And I'll put a boot right in her socialist platform. Well, looks like I already did. Men and women's bathrooms, boys and girls sports, higher taxes, higher gas prices. They're building a wall around D.C., but they're not protecting our borders. They're laughing at us. Now they're going to try to take away our guns?
Oh, hell no.
I moved my family of seven back to Texas because I wanted to raise my kids in a constitutional friendly state. Here in Texas, we are free. We live free. We are a threat to those in power. They hate Texas. They hate our way of life. The communists in D.C. want to shut down our churches, close our businesses, indoctrinating our children, communism in our classrooms, make our daughters unsafe in sports and school, destroy American borders and our American history. We must stop them. Hire me to represent you, and I'll go to D.C. and kick some left-wing ass. Voters in the Texas 6th Congressional District, vote Big Dan in the special election. I'll fight for you and the Texas way of life. Let's make America Texas again. I'm Dan Rodemer, and I approve this message.
All right, so Dan Lisa just got home. Go, he's sleeping, honey. It's okay. Just leave him. Anyways, Dan was supposed to come on the show a couple years ago. And, like, we spoke on the phone. Like, a viewer actually was friends with him and put us in touch. And we made plans for him to come on the show. Well, long story short, he never showed up. And I never heard from him again. I don't know if maybe somebody got to him and said, you don't want to go on Zach's show because it's going to be bad for your campaign. But needless to say, he didn't win anyways. I was always a little confused as to why he didn't show up. But anyways, the reason I'm talking about him today is because he was just arrested for killing a man in a Las Vegas hotel room. Apparently, he was at some type of costume party. He was dressed like Ken from the Ken, the Barbie movie. Now, obviously, he hasn't gone to trial yet. He hasn't been convicted. I'm simply reporting what is being reported. And this happened in Las Vegas. So, he showed up at a Halloween party. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess, yeah, it was Halloween. It was in October. He showed up at a Halloween party dressed as Ken, and he allegedly beat another man to death inside a Las Vegas hotel room. So, a warrant was issued for his arrest, for the death of a man by the name of Christopher Tapp. So, Chris is, he was a 47-year-old man. Dan's 45. Tapp died after the incident at Resorts World on October 29th, 2023. And then a Clark County grand jury indicted Dan for the murder last week. So it was initially suspected that Tapp died of an apparent overdose and then he fell. That was according to documents that were obtained by 8 News Now. But after they interviewed a couple of witnesses, police now believe that Dan Rodimer attacked Tapp after he allegedly offered Dan Rodimer's model stepdaughter, Bella Duffy, cocaine during this Halloween party. Now, I can absolutely understand why Dan would get a little bit bristly at the idea of his daughter being offered cocaine by a stranger. I mean, it's a little sleazy. But it is Vegas, and obviously Dan is a wrestler. I mean, the guy has a physical prowess that's over and above the average person. So the way it looks right now, the police are claiming that essentially Dan must have colluded with witnesses at the party to cover up the fact that he beat this guy to death. And regardless of what they're saying, I think that the truth will come out. I mean, I don't know that Dan actually did this. I mean, it's kind of shocking. That's why I'm bringing you to. It's kind of crazy. So doctors pronounced Tapp dead at a Las Vegas hospital on November 5th. So it sounds like he was, you know, perhaps in a coma and then he, you know, languished in there, in the hospital for a couple of days. But they blamed his death as a result of blunt force trauma to the head. So they scanned him. He had a couple of brain bleeds. And later on, they learned that Tapp, who himself had also been acquitted of murder after serving 2 decades in prison. This was not a nice guy. He was kind of a scumbag. He had been involved in an altercation inside the hotel room before he was found and then taken to the hospital. Now, Danny Lyons, I guess this is a friend of Rodimer's stepdaughter, claimed to hear Dan Rodimer say, "If you ever talk to my daughter again, I'll effing kill you." And then immediately after hearing Dan say that to Christopher, the witness heard 2 loud banging noises. So, sounds like the witness they have didn't actually see what happened. That'll obviously be to Dan Rodimer's favor when they go to trial. But Lyons also told police she saw Dan knock Christopher to the ground, at which time Christopher's head hit a small table. If she actually saw that, then, you know, this isn't murder, obviously. I mean, like, this is a crime of passion at best. Perhaps Dan could be, well, actually convicted of manslaughter, but if they're trying to go for murder, I don't see how this could actually be something that he would be convicted of. But then she witnessed Dan Rodimer punch Christopher throughout his head and body. So another witness told a person attending the hotel room party that Tapp slipped and fell and hit his head on a coffee table. Other witnesses told police several people used cocaine at the party. Looks like this is the room. This is the coffee table. Looks to me to be a metal framed coffee table. But Lyons told the grand jury that Tapp offered her and Duffy cocaine. Later, Dan Rodimer allegedly made the threat to Tapp when Rodimer's wife, Sarah Rodimer, entered the room. She was dressed as Barbie. She tried to calm him down. It doesn't appear that anyone at the party called 911. Odom allegedly waited 30 minutes to an hour to call hotel security, who then alerted paramedics and police. Now, despite head injuries and bruising to this man's jaw, police were still not contacted.
tap the guy who's dead. His loved ones later realized the circumstances appeared to be suspicious, and they're the ones who reached out to police. Now, it could also be that his family smelled a payday because they know that Dan Rodimer is a, you know, he's a high profile guy. He's a wealthy guy. So Tap was a sponsor of the event that was happening in this hotel room. And the person who was holding the party told the security at Resorts World that Tap had slipped on a pair of slippers. They were not able to find any slippers, so they thought that was suspicious. According to transcripts from the grand jury, the witness said that Sarah Rodimer told her the next day not to say anything if law enforcement asked. Unfortunately, if this is true, if the account is true, that could be construed as witness intimidation. She said if anyone asks about it, law enforcement-wise, to say you saw nothing. She said you don't want to get involved in this. So then investigators also obtained text messages between Dan and Sarah Rodimer, and in those text messages, Sarah said, I watched you nearly murder somebody, and I had to take your effing hands from his neck as he laid there, and you ran away, and I spent 2 hours trying to take care of him. Nobody should have to watch their husband murder somebody. That's the damaging part right there. That's something I don't know how he's going to get over. Now, this guy, Tapp, he's from Idaho. He had previously been charged in a 1996 rape and murder of an 18-year-old girl. Now, he was actually excluded by DNA evidence, and he was released because of the Innocence Project. He was convicted in 98 on charges of first-degree murder, rape, and the use of a deadly weapon, and then he was sentenced later that year to life in prison with a minimum sentence of 30 years for that murder conviction and then 10 years for the rape conviction. And then on July 17th of 2019, his murder conviction was vacated. So Rodimer's attorney, David Chesnoff, and Richard Schoenfeld argued earlier this month that those text messages between Dan and his wife should not be part of the case in terms of evidence. And at the time of their client's arrest, they said Dan Rodimer intended to fight the charge, as I would expect him to do. In 2020, when he ran, he actually ran in Nevada's 3rd congressional district, and then he also ran in Texas's 3rd congressional or 6th congressional district. It looks like he was attempting to run again, but he hasn't been successful. He's currently out on bail on a $200,000 bond. He's going to be back in court on May 8th. And this just kind of seems like a real tragedy as far as I'm concerned. You know, I can totally understand why he would not be okay with some guy who looks like a total skeez trying to give your daughter and her friend cocaine at a Halloween party. Man, but you got to watch yourself, especially when you're a pro wrestler like that, you know, and it also makes you think, I mean, how many times you've heard of people who are professional athletes who end up committing overt acts of violence. And obviously, you know, roid rage comes into play. You know, I mean, like it's definitely a real phenomenon. People who take steroids and certain steroids, you know, there's this one called Trenbolone. Trenbolone makes people absolutely insane. And, you know, they might end up doing some real damage and hurting somebody as a result of it. Now, I don't know that Dan was taking Trenbolone or any other steroids, but the dude was in good shape, okay? Definitely was in good shape. And he certainly had a physical presence that was much, much more attuned than anybody else who was there. So the guy's the scumbag, not Dan, the guy that's dead. Perhaps the world is a better place, I hope that justice is served, and I hope that this doesn't destroy his family, because this is the kind of thing that would. Absolutely crazy. All right, so moving on from that, let's talk a little bit about Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen, the star witness at President Trump's hush money trial. Oh, gosh. Yeah, Gixxer, I mean, you're right. I mean, I assume that all wrestlers are taking steroids, but I also don't want to put myself in any legal jeopardy by making statements that I can't back up. So, we've spoken about a couple of different ways that this case against Donald Trump is in jeopardy. Not only because of, you know, the reputation of Michael Cohen or the relationship that he had with Donald Trump and perhaps with Stormy Daniels, also mistakes that have been made by the prosecutor, Alvin Bragg, you know, errors that have been made by the judge, Juan Marchand. But it looks like there's a new layer here that I wasn't even aware of. Apparently, Michael Cohen has been using TikTok as a fundraising vehicle, and those TikTok videos could potentially be used as evidence to destroy the prosecution's case. So this past Sunday, an article was published talking about how Michael Cohen has been cashing in on the Trump trial by using TikTok to do live streams, and how that could be a major problem for the prosecution. So Cohen has yet to take the witness stand, but while he's been on his live streams, he's been discussing President Trump. He's also been talking about the ongoing trial, and he's also talking about the testimony that's already underway during these nightly live streams that he's been hosting. And of course, he's making a ton of money. People are donating to him. He's making advertising revenue. There are hours and hours and hours of TikTok live streams that are up there. Now, if it was just him doing live streams talking about the case, I mean, that wouldn't be such a big deal. However, his reputation is already in question, and his credibility as an expert witness is definitely in question. So the prosecutor probably would be pretty pissed about what Michael Cohen is doing, because you don't want your star witness to be talking about the case in any other forum. I mean, you want them to reveal all of the evidence in court, and you don't want them talking about, you know, actually listening to the testimony of other witnesses, because then it looks like you're coordinating your testimony to do the greatest possible damage. And let me be very clear, I'm certain that's exactly what Michael Cohen is doing. Why wouldn't he want to do as much damage to Donald Trump as possible? I mean, the man has done everything he can to try to destroy Trump during the time, I would say, that when he worked for him, and then even now after he's worked for him. So these gifts that he's getting on TikTok, I mean, it's like, I don't know if you guys have ever seen a TikTok live stream, but like they throw, it's kind of like on pilled, you know, like it's like, you know, it's like a hot dog or like a heart or a rose or something. Like, there's all these different things and they have different monetary values. But a former assistant U.S. attorney, Andrew McCarthy, said that Michael Cohen's live streams are a major problem for prosecutors. He said, it's not a problem. It is not a problem for Cohen's credibility, because he has none. He's a convicted perjurer and a fraudster whose current defense of his fraud convictions is that he wasn't telling the truth when he pled guilty. So even though he is completely unbelievable as a witness, the prosecution has still chosen to make Michael Cohen their star witness. And I don't believe that anything he says is going to hold up under the ultimate scrutiny of the jurors. And then, you know, if they do convict President Trump, obviously there's going to be appeals and such as that. But he continued, Michael Avenatti, he's been hilarious going out there and talking about Michael Cohen. He said, Michael Cohen, through his narcissism and his evil, may have just torpedoed the case against Trump. Never underestimate this guy's ability to screw something up due to his ignorance and arrogance. He's dumber than a box of rocks. The state can't win the case without him, and because of his conduct in reviewing trial testimony in violation of the court's order, which he just admitted to when speaking with ABC, the court must strike him as a witness, declare a mistrial, or both. He had no business commenting on other witnesses' testimony. Thank you, Michael Cohen. And then profiting off the trial, that adds another conflict to the pile, because Michael Cohen has a vested interest in seeing this trial proceed in a certain direction. It may not be the straw that breaks the camel's back, but, you know, clearly this should be something that is brought up in the minds of the jury. And obviously, it's going to be brought up by Trump's legal team when they cross-examine Michael Cohen. You know, isn't it true, Mr. Cohen, that you've been doing TikTok live streams, making thousands of dollars every night, talking about the case against my client? Well, yes. Yes, it is. Well, isn't it true, Mr. Cohen, that violating the court's order, you've been watching the daily testimony and then commenting about it on your live streams, making thousands of dollars, discussing the case against my client? Well, yes, it is. Isn't it true, Mr. Cohen? And he's going to get just blown out of the water. Michael Cohen is not a reliable witness. He wasn't reliable before. And now Trump's legal team is going to have everything they need to ask to have his testimony struck from the record. And then, of course, they're going to ask for a mistrial or an ultimate dismissal. Now, Michael Cohen, in speaking to ABC News, said, I am not the defendant in this criminal matter and am not the subject of Judge Mershon's gag order. Donald is. Nevertheless, I elected, out of respect to the court and the prosecutors, to cease commenting on Trump and this matter, which I have done. Now, Alvin Bragg, for his part, has not discussed this, but you can bet this is going to be something that comes up again in the future. No, but will the judge? Probably not. I don't think that the judge is going to give any rulings in favor of Donald Trump, but that doesn't matter because once you've got it on the record that the case is completely tainted and that there's no way the jury could have possibly given a fair verdict based upon the weight of the evidence, it's grounds for an appeal almost immediately. And I'm sure that it will be grounds for an expedited appeal. So, as I've said before, I don't think that Donald Trump is any true legal jeopardy here. All right, so moving on to the next section. Earlier today, as the trial continued in the New York State Supreme Court, Judge Juan Marchand continued to mull an opportunity to sanction President Trump yet again for allegedly violating that gag order once again. Now, the gag order, as you well know, prevents President Trump from making any public statements. Any public statements about this case, about the witnesses that are participating in the trial. He can talk about Alvin Bragg, but he can't talk about any members of the court staff or the district attorney staff. He can't talk about family members. He can't talk about counsels or their staff members. And if those statements are made with the intent to materially interfere with the work that is being done to prosecute him, well, then, of course, the judge is going to have a real problem with it. So Todd Blanche earlier today was defending President Trump's comments that he's made since the last time they were in court. When President Trump had made a comment about a witness, he was asked about David Pecker. David Pecker had testified earlier this week. As far as I was concerned, David Pecker's testimony didn't do anything to make Trump look guilty. It actually did. It made him look better, especially in light of the fact that he said Trump never knew about these hush money payments. I mean, that's really all you need to know right there. So somebody in the media had asked Donald Trump, you know, how he felt about David Pecker. You know, what did you think about David Pecker? Trump said, well, he's been very nice. Which technically is a comment about a witness, but it's totally benign. Now, Todd Blanche, the attorney for President Trump, he said that although President Trump made that comment, he actually sidestepped the reporter's specific question about David Pecker, and he gave him a factual and neutral answer, which I think anybody can understand is totally a legitimate thing to do. Jim Kyle says, come on, Zach, fixer lawyers and debarred lawyers don't lie. Come on, man. So the judge responded. He doesn't care that Donald Trump gave a factual and neutral answer. It's the fact that he made any commentary at all about any witness, which, although benign and not going to do anything to jeopardize the case for the prosecution, is still technically within the boundaries of that gag order. He said, it's not just about Mr. Pecker. So it's notable that Judge Juan Marchand continues to express concern in the same way he did during his initial ruling where he held President Trump in contempt. He does not want President Trump to execute any free speech. Now, more importantly, he doesn't want President Trump to be able to comment as a political candidate. He said that the whole press area has been set aside for Trump in the hallway so that President Trump, as a candidate for the presidency, has the opportunity to speak about anything he wants, except for the things that I've said he is not allowed to talk about, which is so ironic. So I guess that as Marchand was kind of he was clashing with the lawyers the other day. He didn't seem to have a good morning, basically. But I guess that he, in speaking to Todd Blanche, he said that he was concerned with the potential violation where President Trump referred to David Pecker as a nice guy. But he didn't go any farther. He hasn't actually sanctioned President Trump. He hasn't held him in contempt again, and he hasn't ordered that he pay another $1,000. Honey, Chi-Chi's coming. He woke up. So it remains to be seen. The draconian rulings of Judge Juan Marchand are just completely out of line as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I think anybody that's watching this case feels the exact same way. It's ridiculous. It's frankly ridiculous. But nobody's ever accused a New York trial lawyer, or excuse me, a New York court judge of being fair or having any sort of loyalty to the bounds of the law or the Constitution itself. Andre, you're alive. It's good to see you. He says, I bought an M4 carbine and I wanted to know if you know of any good optics that won't obliterate the bank. LOL. I do, but I mean, you know, when we go to commercial for the second half, I'll go get a couple of optics that I have and, I'll show them off. I mean, I think that, EOTech and Holosun, those two are great. I prefer EOTech. And you can get a couple of different levels of each of them. But, yeah, basically, you can't go wrong with EOTech and Holosun. But again, I prefer EOTech. I'll go get some optics, when we go to commercial, though. All right. So, we got to talk about the Boeing whistleblowers, guys. I mean, this is just, a horrific and fascinating story. So, I mean, you remember a couple of months ago when the whistleblower for Boeing, one of them, John Barnett, he was found suicided in his truck in the morning as he was supposed to be on his way for a third day of depositions. He had been fighting to have his voice heard and to hold Boeing accountable for a long time. And he loved Boeing. He had been at Boeing for 32 years. On March 9th, he was found dead. He was holding a silver pistol. His finger was on the trigger, and he had a bullet wound to the side of his head. Now, that was certainly coincidental, and obviously that was a good thing for Boeing. But the thing is, nobody believes that he killed himself. He did allegedly leave a suicide note. That suicide note has not been revealed. We don't know if it was actually written in his handwriting. And considering the fact that he was in the midst of a deposition and he was in good spirits, you know, he was communicative with his lawyers, and he was making plans for the future, nobody believes that he would kill himself. And his lawyers also don't believe that he would kill himself. They really stressed that they had no indications he would take his own life, that nobody believes it, and that the police need to do a full investigation, like, you know, forensically, and then obviously looking into everything else that they can possibly find to determine, you know, what happened and, you know, frankly, who it was that killed him. So yesterday, as Brad and I are on the air, we learn about a second Boeing whistleblower. This guy right here, his name is Joshua Dean. He's a little bit younger. He's my age, 45. Look at him. He's in good health, okay? He got fired in 2023 because he also had raised
Messenger.
Concerns. Oops.
And
because he also had raised concerns about safety on Boeing airplanes. Now, he wasn't a direct employee of Boeing, but his whistleblowing had a direct impact on Boeing manufactured airplanes that got shipped out. He worked for Spirit AeroSystems. They were a Boeing supplier, and you might remember the name Spirit AeroSystems because their name has come up recently in a couple of different Boeing-related disasters that have happened. Remember that door that flew off the airplane on the Alaska Airlines flight? Well, you know, that was related to a Spirit AeroSystems part. Andre says, by the way, most times I have only been able to catch the lives after they are done. I have been so busy. My tags just expired yesterday, so now I can't even drive my car. But yes, it is good to be here. Well, thank you very much for being here, man. I'm glad that you are able to catch the shows. Do me a favor, guys. If you're hanging out over on Rumble, please hit that like button. We've got 404 people here. Excuse me, 404 likes and 3,300 people watching. Thank you so much over to the people on Pilled. FilterDog1, thank you for the can. Who Cares says, this afternoon press area, Trump had lawyer with him, and his lawyers asked the judge to remove, Truth Social posts. So they want him to remove more, you're saying? Raising Kane, good to see you, buddy. Thanks for the can. So, this brand new whistleblower, his death is not directly a suicide. We'll talk about the circumstances of it. But what I thought was really interesting is that after John Barnett was found dead, it came out that he believed that Boeing had hired people to spy on him prior to his suicide. And, you know, I mean, why do they need to spy on him? I mean, obviously he's a whistleblower. Maybe they want to know what he's doing. Maybe they want to find something that they can use against him. But maybe they also want to know his patterns and where he's going and who might be coming around so that it can be that much easier to make it look like he shot and killed himself. You know, when he initially died, I mean, I said, I had a lot of people who were like, oh, you know, it's Boeing. Why would they just kill somebody? We're talking about billions of dollars here, guys. I mean, Boeing is one of the largest manufacturers of airplanes in the world. If there is a mass recall on Boeing airplanes that are at every single airline company all around, not just the United States, but most countries around the world, that's going to result in a major hit to their stock price. People are going to get fired. It's going to result in, you know, a lot of money that they're going to have to pay out, maybe in damages, maybe in lawsuits, certainly in replacement parts. This is going to have major ramifications, lasting impact. And it's quite clear that Boeing and Spirit AeroSystems did not want anybody to know about the problems that they were experiencing, because when both John Barnett and Joshua Dean came to their respective employers, the first thing that was done was they were marginalized. And then when they raised problems again later, they fired Dean and they basically put John Barnett into a small office with parts that were already bad, and that was it. They made him do something that was far below his station. So it's obvious that Boeing and Spirit AeroSystems did not want any of this information to get out. It's likely that they were in communication with each other, likely because they were both large corporations. They were deeply invested in one another's success, and any whistleblowers that might come forward could put both of their companies at jeopardy. So let's talk a little bit about who Joshua Dean was. He was also a quality auditor, very similar to what John Barnett did at Boeing. And he was working at Spirit AeroSystems. He was one of the first whistleblowers to allege that Spirit leadership had ignored the manufacturing defects on the 737 MAX. 737 MAX is also the same airliner that John Barnett had raised his alarm bells about, and Boeing leadership also ignored his calls for an investigation as well. So Josh died yesterday, not from a suicide, but from a very sudden, fast-spreading infection. That right there sounds so suspicious, and just wait until you hear the details of it. So Josh lived in Wichita, Kansas. This is where Spirit's based. He was only 45, and as I said, he was in good health. He was noted for having a healthy lifestyle. The guy took care of himself, and he had been in critical condition for 2 weeks before he died. Now, Spirit AeroSystems and their spokesperson have already made a statement. They made a statement very quickly after Josh's death. They said, "Our thoughts are with Josh Dean's family. This sudden loss is stunning news here and for his loved ones." Now, Josh hadn't worked at Spirit AeroSystems since April of 2023. And the only contact that he had with them was in connection with the lawsuit that was against them that Josh was currently embroiled in. This is a different lawsuit, if I'm not mistaken, than the lawsuit that John Barnett was involved in. So, Dean had given a deposition in a Spirit shareholder lawsuit, and he had also filed a complaint with the FAA, and he alleged that there was serious and gross misconduct by senior quality management at the production line on the 737. Like I said, he was fired in April of 2023. At that point, he filed a complaint with the Department of Labor. He alleged that his termination was retaliation, which of course it was, because he was raising concerns about aviation safety. So, the people at Spirit, then essentially, basically went on the defensive. Now, it was said that Dean became ill. He went to the hospital because he was having trouble breathing. And then once he got to the hospital, guess what they did to him? They intubated him. They put him on a respirator. And then because of that respirator, he developed pneumonia. And then after he developed pneumonia, because he was in a hospital, he developed a severe bacterial infection known as MRSA. After he had gone through all of that, like boom, 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 he deteriorated very rapidly. They had to airlift him from Wichita to a hospital in Oklahoma City. And then once he got there, he was put on an ECMO machine. I had never heard of an ECMO machine, but actually what it does is it artificially circulates and then oxygenates the blood for the patient outside of their body, because apparently their heart and lung function isn't working as well as it needs to. So their own organs are not working, and this machine is actually what's keeping them alive. Because you've got a machine now, you know, doing the breathing for him, you've got a machine now doing the work of his heart, actually oxygenating his blood, everything is artificial. There's a lot of different avenues that you can introduce something, a toxin, a poison, you know, something deadly that would then lead to the ultimate death of the patient. And, you know, lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. So on Friday, his mother put a message out on Facebook and said he was fighting for his life. And here's the kicker. By the end of it, the doctors were considering amputating both of his hands and both of his feet. Now, from what I understand, he was sedated, but this must have been brutal, what he was going through. So, and then he died. He died, and now he's no longer with us. Does anybody else think that this sounds suspicious? Because I don't see how you couldn't see it as being suspicious. This seems like they killed another whistleblower. They killed the two biggest whistleblowers, because you've got somebody from Spirit, you've got somebody from Boeing. The one guy from Boeing, he is, you know, completely destroying Boeing's reputation. The guy from Spirit is completely destroying Spirit's reputation. And together, they have been responsible for, like, the most notable air disasters in recent memory. So now they kill these guys, they take them out of commission, and, they're just completely out of the loop, and nobody has to worry about them anymore. Now, both of them were being represented by the same guys, and I'm going to call that law office, and we're going to see if I can get a comment from them. You know, as far as I know, the investigation into John Barnett is still ongoing. The Charleston County Coroner's Office has stated that his death is from an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound, but the police are still investigating. Now, the lawyer, Brian Knowles, for both of them, said that he did not want to speculate about the circumstances or the close timing of Josh Dean's death in relation to John Barnett. Maybe Brian Knowles is fearing for his own life or the lives of his other clients, because, as I said, there are a number of other whistleblowers that were involved in the Spirit Airlines lawsuit as well. He said, whistleblowers are needed. They bring to light wrongdoing and corruption in the interests of society. It takes a lot of courage to stand up. It's a difficult set of circumstances. Our thoughts now are with Josh's family and John's family. So, yes, there is very, very, very sketchy circumstances surrounding this. So here's the timeline of what happened to Josh. So back in October 2022, Josh Dean said he found a serious manufacturing defect. It was the fact that mechanics were improperly drilling holes into the aft pressure bulkhead of the 737 MAX. So he did what any quality engineer would do. He flagged the issue with management, and they did nothing about it. So just keeping in mind that Spirit Aerosystems was aware of this deadly and perhaps devastating defect that was being intentionally done to these pieces, and they chose to do nothing. So now, because he was focused on those defects, he had missed them initially during a separate audit, and then he found another manufacturing flaw in the fittings. And those fittings were attaching the vertical tail fin to the tail fin to the fuselage. So when he discovered that in April, he shut down production delivery, which was undoubtedly a big hole in the pocketbook of both Spirit and Boeing. And because of that, rather than addressing the issue, they fired him. So then by August, Spirit announced, guess what? the discovery of improperly drilled holes in the 737 MAX's aft pressure bulkhead. This is the same thing that he had tried to raise awareness about back in October of 2022. This was actually present since as early as 2019. And because of the discovery and their forced, them being forced to admit it to the public, there was another delivery halt at this plant. So then once Josh Dean saw that, that's when he filed his safety complaint with the FAA. And he said that Spirit had used him as a scapegoat, and they actually lied to the FAA about the aft pressure bulkhead defects. So after he was fired, I said, Spirit did nothing to inform the FAA or inform the public. They already had the knowledge about these defects, so he felt he had to act. And then in November, the FAA actually responded to him, sent him a letter saying that, hey, we've completed our investigation of the safety issues that you flagged. Now, they don't actually explain to him what the outcome is, but they kind of confirmed with the language in the letter that the allegations had substance. They said the investigation determined that your allegations were appropriately addressed under an FAA-approved safety program. However, due to the privacy provisions of those programs, specific details cannot be released. Stop asking questions, pleb. So then, that same month, he filed his aviation whistleblower complaint with the Department of Labor. He alleged wrongful termination and gross misconduct of senior-level Spirit Aerosystems quality managers. Obviously, that case is still pending. So Josh, he stood to profit from this lawsuit. He also stood to save a lot of lives. Now that he's dead, now that John Barnett is dead, where does it leave all this stuff? Well, as I said, there are still a number of other whistleblowers out there. But my question is, are they going to remain whistleblowers, or are they going to instead take a payoff now that they've seen that whistleblowers at both Spirit and Boeing have been entirely expendable, and those people are just no longer around? Really, really awful stuff. Yeah, so there is, hold on, I don't want to, okay. So, this is an article back from 2021, discussing a number of whistleblowers from the South Carolina plant where John Barnett had worked. And he's talking about the number of complaints that he's gotten and the people that he is actually helping with these cases. People last night when I mentioned that they both had the same lawyers, people were like, oh, you know, this guy's probably in on it. But from all of my research into Brian Knowles, I mean, this is his forte. He specifically represents whistleblowers. That's definitely not something that most lawyers do. Most lawyers are going to be going for the easy money. But Brian Knowles specializes in helping people to hold big corporations like Boeing and Spirit Aerosystems to account. So I tend to believe, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that I think he's a good guy. So I am reaching out to him, and I'll let you guys know what happens with that. Thank you very much to Who Cares, who says, for new glasses for Zach, not remove, approve. Thank you very much. Okay. And then the Steel Monkey says, smells like the clowns at work, CIA. Well, you know, the thing about it is that Boeing wouldn't even need CIA agents to do their dirty deeds for them. You know, I mean, like, they're a big enough company. They've probably got their own, like, you know, secret clandestine operators that work for them. And, you know, I mean, either that or they can just hire somebody who, you know, is a professional hitman to go ahead and take them out. You know, I will say this, though. Our next story is definitely the CIA. This is related to that James O'Keefe. Oh, shit. Sorry. Something is wrong with my wrist, you guys. I don't know what the heck is going on. Honey, would you bring me some ibuprofen or some naproxen or something like that? This is not good. God dang. I'm going to stand up, you guys, because I need to stop putting pressure on my wrist. Okay, that's better. Man. Okay, thank you, babe. Thank you. All right, so yesterday we watched the groundbreaking and late-breaking report. James O'Keefe and his plucky investigators at OMG using Bumble's algorithm to honeypot CIA agents and people working within the confines of the federal government and get them to admit that everything we've been talking about for years at this point is 100% true. So this report now coming out has been a major dunk on the intel community. And let's see, James O'Keefe actually had spoken out. Well, this is in relation to what I mentioned yesterday with the attacks that recently have been welling up against him. So he said, I have evidence that exposes the CIA, and it's on camera. I'm working on releasing a story that I believe is the most important of my entire career. Do you think it's a coincidence that right at this moment? Thank you. Thank you. Hang on. Sorry, guys. Give me just a second. I gotta take this. Okay. I'm sure you'll recognize they are masters of using half-truths and innuendos to raise doubt against people who don't deserve it. That's exactly what they did to him. It's meant to consume my time and energy to make me back down, but it's not going to work. Rest assured, nothing will stop me from releasing the story. And yesterday, we got the story. Boy, was it a story. He also said that the CIA spied on President Trump's presidency, and it's still monitoring him today. If you saw the report yesterday, the agencies of the federal government, a variety of intel agencies, but primarily the CIA was the focus of this one because that was where this particular target actually worked. That target was named Amjad Fazizi? I don't know how to say his name. He said that the intel agencies got together and made an agreement to not tell Trump everything that he needed to know. And then James O'Keefe went through a list of federal crimes that the CIA broke in not giving President Trump the information that he needed to run the country and secure the national security of the United States of America. If you haven't seen the video, it's 30 minutes long. It's on my report yesterday. It was the last thing that we watched, and it's so good. It is so good. It's probably my favorite O'Keefe Media Group release to this point. Now, as a result of that report coming out, a couple of big things have happened. First of all, the man in that video is no longer employed by the CIA, and Matt Gaetz is calling for an investigation into the claims that are made by this man in that video. So this evidence that was gathered by James O'Keefe is damning, and a CIA contractor admitting that the intelligence agencies were working together to keep top secret information hidden from the president and that they were still spying on him and spying on his family. My goodness. I mean, that right there is treasonous behavior, in my opinion. So This man, Amjad Faizam, he was a program manager working in cyber operations for the CIA. He was also an NSA.gov contractor with top secret clearance working for Deloitte. He got caught in this undercover video implicating the highest levels of the intelligence agencies, including the executive staff. He said, we're talking about the director and his subordinates. He said Gina Haspel. He insinuated that Mike Pompeo, he thought, did the same thing. He said that they kept information from Trump because they knew he'd effing disclose it. And he says there are certain people that would give him a high-level overview but would never give him any details. You know why? Because he'll leak those details. He's a Russian asset. He's owned by the effing Russians. So the revelation by this American swiper, that's what they call them, put together quite the report. And he was also quoted as saying, we monitor everything. We also have people that monitor his ex-wife. He likes to use burner phones. He said, we steal information. We hack other countries, just like that, who states he currently works at the CIA's China Mission Center. He said, we don't share information across agencies because the CIA is very reluctant to share information with the NSA because they're careless. Now, Matt Gaetz is not wasting any time. He watched it probably as soon as it came out. If I had to guess, he probably had an advanced copy. He saw it ahead of time so that he could write up his request for an investigation. And I know you're probably thinking, oh, great, another congressional investigation. Nothing ever happens. Yeah, you know, this is the culmination, I think, of everything that we've been discussing for the last several years. The CIA truly is the head of the octopus. And with that in mind, the only way that we're going to address what's happening in the intel community is by forcing the oversight process that is written into the laws and regulations of our government. So he has gotten together with the weaponization subcommittee, that's the weaponization of government subcommittee, to immediately launch an investigation into this report by James O'Keefe. So Matt Gaetz shared a copy of the very same letter that he sent to the chair of that select subcommittee on the weaponization of government, who happens to be Jim Jordan. And in his tweet about this formal request for this immediate investigation, Gaetz says that this undercover video was only released hours ago. So again, I think it's likely he had an advanced copy and he knew it was coming out, and he timed this release, this letter, and this request for an immediate investigation along with it. Let's go ahead and read that letter itself. I'm going to make this big for everybody here. He says, Chairman Jordan, James O'Keefe and O'Keefe Media Group recently released footage of an undercover encounter between his undercover journalist and a project manager working in cyber operations for the Central Intelligence Agency and a National Security Agency contractor with top secret clearance. This footage contains evidence the American intelligence agencies withheld intelligence from President Donald Trump before and during his presidency, and used the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act authorities to spy on President Trump, and may still be doing so today. Given that the Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government has broad jurisdiction to investigate the role of executive branch agencies in investigating American citizens, any unconstitutional, illegal, or unethical activities committed by said agencies, as well as any other related violations of the civil liberties of the citizens of the United States, I am formally requesting that the Weaponization Subcommittee open a formal investigation into the concerning actions allegedly perpetrated by the intel community against President Trump, as exhibited in the video footage that has been uncovered by James O'Keefe and O'Keefe Media. Sorry about that. So the CIA has actually commented on this investigation. So listen to this. The official appears to have been terminated as a result of our reporting today. When the CIA was asked to comment, O'Keefe Media received an exclusive statement on the record from a CIA spokesperson. These claims about CIA are absolutely false and ridiculous. Of course they are, clowns. CIA is resolutely a political institution that provides intelligence support to policymakers, including the President of the United States, irrespective of who occupies the office. We are a foreign intelligence-focused agency and do not monitor the former president. Whatever. These guys are lying through their teeth. The individual making these allegations is a former contractor who does not represent CIA. In the video, which was taken last week, the CIA official waves his intelligence community green badge. Oh my gosh, it looks like they have deleted the video from YouTube. Yes, they have deleted the video. Oh no, this is James O'Keefe's live discussion about his findings. Wow, they deleted his discussion about the video. Let me see. Frey and the boys, my Rumble just crashed on my phone. I had to reinstall the whole app and reset my password. Something is fishy. Has anybody else had this problem? I don't know why Rumble's app crashing would force you to reset your password. That's pretty weird. Well, let's go. Hang on. Let's see if we can get a comment from James O'Keefe, if he's made any videos commenting on the report since the time he released it. Ah, well, maybe not James O'Keefe, but I can tell you that President Trump has actually commented on the report. Let's go ahead and watch President Trump's
talking about how the CIA director has withheld information.
Oh, God, James O'Keefe is there with him.
Mr. President, your reaction to this videotape of the CIA individual talking about how the CIA director has withheld information from you.
What's shocking to see how stupid somebody can be. This guy's for real. You ought to get rid of him. CIA, Central Intelligence Agency. This is not an intelligent guy. To be openly talking to a woman that walks up and starts asking him questions and talking that way. So he may be bragging or showing off to some young lady. I have no idea the conditions under which he spoke, but I'd get rid of him real fast. If he's for real, get rid of him.
Mr. President, your reaction?
I feel like that's a rather reasonable track to take. Listen, we got to take a break for the second half of the show. We're going to be right back in just a moment. Warnings of a recession are growing louder as we near sell in May and go away. All signs appear to point to a sizable downturn for the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ. Now, meanwhile, gold prices have been hitting all-time highs, and the rally is far from over. Now, y'all know silver is always late to the party, but once it finds momentum, it can easily outperform gold. So protect your retirement with gold or place a bullish bet on silver. Call the proud Americans of the Patriot Gold Group today before it's too late. Just mention Red Pill 78 and this show, Red Pill News, and you're always going to get best-in-class service from Patriots protecting Patriots. Patriot Gold Group has the No Fee for Life IRA, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you just might be eligible for that No Fee for Life IRA on qualifying rollovers. So give them a call today at 888-857-6092 and get your free investor guide today. Patriot Gold Group is a Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer for 7 years in a row. Call them today at 888-857-6092. And when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you very much for sticking around. If you haven't yet, please hit the like button. If you might feel so inclined, just go ahead and share the show out there on your favorite social media platform. Clearly, the guy who was speaking in the report is a total moron. His operational security is shite. He never should have been talking about any of those things. But as I said yesterday, people in these sorts of positions tend to have a sort of ego and hubris about them. And people can just become a little too caught up in the captivation of a beautiful young woman, thinking that they're going to get something that they never intend to deliver. I hope at least he was able to get the meals split, but something tells me he probably paid for everything. Very, very funny that this guy is no longer working there. All right, so let's talk a little bit also about the case against President Trump, an aspect of it that we haven't looked at for quite some time. There's a gentleman by the name of Mark Pomerantz. He is a former Trump prosecutor. And what's interesting is that he was forced to invoke his Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination during a deposition. He was questioned under oath, and he was asked if he violated the law during his investigation to get President Trump. He was a former senior prosecutor on Manhattan District Attorney's Alvin Bragg's team, and he resigned in protest after Alvin Bragg had initially ended the investigation. So Pomerantz testified before the House Judiciary Committee back in May of 2023. During that testimony, he pled the Fifth when he was asked under oath if he violated the law to get President Trump. That is very telling, because Mark Pomerantz, as a prosecutor, is supposed to be above reproach. He is supposed to be not above the law, but certainly above breaking the law. And if he was forced to plead the Fifth in relation to that very particular question, I think the only reasonable inference we can draw is that Mark Pomerantz, in fact, did break the law in the same way that CIA executive committee did when they decided to not give President Trump the information he needed as the commander-in-chief of the United States of America, and in the same way that the FBI agents did when they decided to lie to get FISA warrants to spy on President Trump, in the same way that many, many people during President Trump's first term in office did when they went through the various operations to entrap President Trump and the people around him, to ensnare them in a plot to destroy and ultimately remove President Trump from contention as the president of the United States of America. So Mark Pomerantz answering that question in that particular way is a major tell. Also, it's worth noting that Mark Pomerantz was not only a lead prosecutor for Alvin Bragg, but he was also a lawyer for Hillary Clinton. As a senior prosecutor on the Manhattan District Attorney's team,
he would have known exactly what the tactics were that were being used to investigate President Trump. He actually went on to write a book about this very topic, and in that book, he claims that that investigation developed evidence that convinced them that Donald Trump had committed very serious crimes. And what those crimes are? Doesn't seem that President Trump has been indicted on them. The crimes that he was eventually indicted on are not serious, and they are considered process violations that normally are resolved by the filing of amended taxes or something like that. So Bragg, in his lawsuit against President Trump, had attempted to stop Mark Pomerantz from testifying before this committee. He ended up losing, and then Pomerantz was forced to come on in, and rather than answer questions, he just continued to plead the fifth and refused to answer any questions regarding that case. He warned in an opening statement that he was going to do just that. He said, "It gives me no joy to invoke my legal rights, but I am glad that the law allows me not to cooperate with this performance of political theater." Now, it should be clear at this point that the Democrats and all of those resistance fighters that have been attempting to destroy President Trump for years at this point have identified no criminal actions that President Trump has taken. They have identified nothing that they have been able to use to take him out. That's why all of the cases that we see against him appear to be just so thin. Let's go ahead and take a look at the video clip of Mark Pomerantz. Actually, it looks like, hold on, I gotta pull the tweet out of this because the code is broken on their website. So, let's go ahead and pull this up. What? Hold on, I hate this.
I'm a brat.
Same age.
Fifth Amendment?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you respect Alvin Bragg?
The same age.
In the same way that the current lead prosecutor in Alvin Bragg's office has a connection directly back to Washington, D.C., because he used to be employed by the Department of Justice, Mark Pomerantz has that exact same deep state connection as he used to be a lawyer for Hillary Clinton. Mark Pomerantz's main objection seems to be that the charges against President Trump didn't come fast enough, but I think Alvin Bragg felt that he had no case against Donald Trump, and ultimately he was forced to bring those charges by the Biden White House, at the behest of their lead attack dog coming in from the district, from the Department of Justice, in an effort to sort of cover up and whitewash any of the actual crimes that the Biden regime was being exposed for committing. Certainly the Biden crime family, had been exposed to quite a great degree at the time that Alvin Bragg brought his case. And remember that the initial indictment seemed to show no true crimes that President Trump had even been charged with. I mean, Alvin Bragg acted incredulous when asked, you know, where are the crimes in this indictment? Why are you not telling us anything? And he said, well, it's basically my prerogative. I don't have to do anything. I don't want to. Freya, no, I'm not doing an afternoon show on Friday because my daughter is here, and I promised her that we would be hanging out. But I am doing the night show. You know what I just realized? I haven't been reading the words that are on screen for the people who are listening to the audio podcast, but it says that Congress has a specific and important interest in preventing politically motivated prosecutions of current and former presidents by elected state and local prosecutors. Obviously, Congress has been failing in that duty. Pomerantz appealed before the House, appeared before the House Judiciary Committee, and he declined to answer most questions.
And how frequently did you go to the office when you were in a special district attorney? An office physically in at that address?
The office is located in several buildings around One Hogan Place. It's not all in one contiguous space of offices. There were several office premises. Having clarified that, I'm not going to answer your question about how often I was physically at the offices of the Manhattan District Attorney.
Probably because he was hardly ever there. He had a ceremonial position that allowed him to put pressure on Alvin Bragg or anybody else in that office, pressure that was designed only to indict and then convict President Trump in an unfair and unjust witch hunt.
Again, I'm not going to respond to your question.
On the basis of
what? On the basis of the fifth paragraph of my statement. Conveniently, Mr. Castor, the fifth paragraph relates to the Fifth Amendment.
So since you left, you employ of the Manhattan VA, do you use email as a method of communication?
I decline to answer your question.
Who's your current email provider?
I decline to answer that question.
So on the Fifth Amendment, right?
Yes, sir.
I'm not trying to get the answers, I'm just trying to
make sure. No, I understand that. And I appreciate that.
And who's your current cell phone provider?
Likewise, I refuse to answer that question on the basis of my rights under the Fifth Amendment.
Okay, now this is going to be an excerpt from Mark Pomerantz's book and his deposition. It's People versus Donald Trump, an inside account. Read by Mark Pomerantz himself. It shows quotes. As I tossed and turned, I asked myself whether... Hold on, I need to turn this down a little bit, don't I? As I tossed and turned, I asked myself whether we had done everything we could to convince Alvin to let us bring our case against Trump. I kept thinking that maybe we were being rash. And you were.
Have you since come to a decision to revise that conclusion?
I declined to answer.
His lawyer was like, I don't think you should answer. When I joined the Trump investigation, I got countless emails and telephone calls from friends and colleagues urging me to go get him and wishing me luck.
I acknowledge writing the book, but I'm not going to expand beyond what is contained in the book for the reasons reflected in my opening statement.
Did they really say go get him?
Again, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to respond beyond what is printed in the book.
Did they not say go get him?
I'm not going to answer your question.
Show me the man and I'll show you the crime. That was a video produced by the House Judiciary Committee, which, very good. It's great to see them out there with a couple of meme masters that are working for them, to get the information out to the American people. Mark Pomerantz, a typical crooked Washington DC insider doing the bidding of the deep state itself. Now here is a, possible future that I do not even want to consider, but since Donald Trump himself is considering it, I thought that it was worth talking about. And that possible future that none of us want to see is what happens if President Trump is not declared the winner in November. Well, President Trump has revealed he's already got plans as to what he's going to do if, in fact, he does fall short and they tell us that Donald Trump did not win the election. Apparently, President Trump spoke with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel when he was in Wisconsin the other day regarding any issues around election integrity that might exist. The comments focused mostly during the rally on the garbage economic record, as Biden, as Donald Trump put it, of Joe Biden, and of course the illegal alien invasion that's coming across the border. But he explained in this interview that he's got two paths after the election. One would be to accept the results if they were just. But in the event that this is an unfair election, as I think a lot of us assume it's going to be, he said, I will spare no expense going to battle. If everything's honest, I'll gladly accept the results. I don't change on that. But if it's not, you have to fight for the right of your country. Now, Serter over on Rumble says, this is for the normies. This is their wake-up call, and the optics of are piling up against the deep state in the public eye. We know all about this. The normies don't. You're absolutely correct, which is why I continue to talk about it, because it's wonderful to see these sorts of things playing out. And I hope that perhaps maybe once in a while somebody will clip this out and then send it on over. And then a normie will see this and then realize that, geez, there are people out there who have been tracking this for a very, very long time. But yes, Serter, every single day, normies are waking up to the truth about the concerted efforts that have been taking place in the bowels of Washington, D.C., ever since Donald Trump announced that he was going to be president of the United States, winning the election in 2016 to their great chagrin. So in terms of this decision for President Trump, I mean, obviously, I would expect nothing less. But to a lot of people, this is a very, very brave decision, especially considering the fact that most of the charges that he's facing right now are directly related to his First Amendment right to question the results of what every single one of us believes was a crooked and rigged election. Now, here is the thing. At the time of writing this, President Trump is leading Joe Biden in every single swing state. This is a pattern that we have been tracking. It has been gradually spreading to each of these states. Now we can say conclusively, based upon a hill coming from the poll, that President Trump is winning in Arizona. He's winning in Georgia. He's winning in Michigan. He's winning in Nevada. He's winning in North Carolina. He's winning in Pennsylvania. And he's winning in Wisconsin. Now, this is in that theoretical two-man matchup. But as I've shown you before, regardless, if there is a third-party candidate or the three third-party candidates who are going to be on most of the ballots, it doesn't hurt President Trump. It only helps him. And he still beats Joe Biden and every single one of those third-party candidates. Let's take a look at Arizona. Joe Biden is holding 44% of the possible vote. Donald Trump is holding 48% of the possible vote, and then 8% is undecided. Likely those would be going to third party candidates. In Georgia, Joe Biden is holding 44%. Donald Trump is holding 47%. In Michigan, Joe Biden is holding 44%. Donald Trump is holding 45%. In Nevada, also 44%. Donald Trump is holding 45%. And then in the last three states, North Carolina, Joe Biden has 42. Donald Trump has 47. Pennsylvania, Joe Biden has 45. Donald Trump has 47. In Wisconsin, Joe Biden has 45. And Donald Trump has 47% of the vote. Now, President Trump also said during this interview that he won Wisconsin last time, as he did. The official results, however, were totally crooked, and it showed that Biden secured 1,630,866 votes compared to President Trump's 1,610,184 votes. That's a margin of 20,000 votes, 20,682. Now, there have been a number of reports calling those results into question. We have gone over this ad nauseum. I think that President Trump truly did win Wisconsin, and that 20,000, 21,000 margin vote win is already completely eroded based upon the results of the primaries that we just saw. You had more than 20,000 people in Wisconsin basically say that they refused to vote for Joe Biden in this next election, and President Trump is looking better than ever. If you go back and look at all of the things that we've found out, it showed that I won the election in Wisconsin. It also showed that I won in other locations. Now, this trend for Joe Biden trending down, with President Trump trending up, By the time November rolls around, that gap is going to be even wider as more normies come on over to President Trump, leaving Joe Biden, as more normies recognize that 2020 was a grifted and stolen election. President Trump is going to have every justifiable right to question the results of this election if it doesn't end up with him being declared the winner, because it's going to be so patently obvious to everyone. They might have been willing to concede to Joe Biden being the winner back in 2020, but after 4 years of disastrous leadership and memories of how good it was under Donald Trump and them knowing that they voted for Donald Trump and not Joe Biden, I don't think anybody is going to stand for it. And this is going to unite the right and the left in a very spectacular way. So continue to remember that. And on the note of uniting both the right and the left, this was a hilarious sight from yesterday at the University of Alabama. Pro-Hamas agitators and Trump supporters both chanting F Joe Biden together in unison. And I've got the video. Let's go ahead and take a look. Okay, hold on. That's not it. Where is it? Here it is. Both sides chanting F Joe Biden. Right now, what you have in America is a confluence of the right and the left, both understanding that Joseph Robinette Biden is the absolute worst thing for American society, for American global dominance, for the future of this nation. Serter says, I would watch the undecided in those polls. I'll bet Trump has more than half of those. Oh, yes, it goes without saying. Every single time we look at a poll, it's my belief that they oversample for the left, and you can always add 5 points or more to Donald Trump, and you can take that from some other aspect of that poll. Trump is always doing better in these polls than they give him credit for, and so that's why I'm even more excited about the numbers that we see. That slim 1 or 2 or 3 point margin that they're giving Trump, it's going to be far larger than that. So let's take a look at this protest. This is obviously something that's dividing America all across the country, and it's got one thing in common. That is Joe Biden. So these protesters at the University of Alabama, Tuscaloosa, were countered by pro-Trump counter-protesters, which, of course, largely were objecting to the treatment of Jewish students. Now, things got a bit testy when the pro-Hamas people started shouting Free Palestine, and then the Trump supporters started singing the national anthem. But very quickly, they found this common ground, and they all started chanting F Joe Biden together. So, according to a news source down there in Alabama, these protesters at the university were demanding that the university cut ties with Lockheed Martin because they're a weapons manufacturer, and evidently they are providing munitions to the Israeli IDF. And of course, they're also asking for an immediate ceasefire, even though the University of Alabama has absolutely nothing to do with it, in the same way that every other university that has protesters has anything to do with the conflict that's going on. Now, what's different about this protest is that Alabama officials took a pretty common sense action to ensure that there was going to be no violence occurring. And they threatened strict consequences for anyone who broke those rules. They actually passed out a page detailing, you know, what was going to happen if people effed around and found out.
See, as you can see, the more you f*** around, the more you're going to find out.
Okay, so let's go ahead and take a look at what they told people. Well, I can't even read it. So they say what's allowed and what's prohibited. Essentially, free speech, free expression, holding signs, but no violence, no damage, nothing like that. And basically, you're going to get expelled if you screw around. So don't F around and you won't find out. Now, considering the fact that the right and the left are coming together on this common ground, and the Hamas or pro-Palestinian protesters all around the country are really putting a sour taste into the mouth of the American people at large, there is a report going around that Democrats across the country are basically in panic mode because these protesters are pushing the entire country to the right. Now, these are the same people who were out in the streets in the Summer of Love 1.0, and the Democrats had their backs 100%. They encouraged them to go out there and protest. They encouraged their mostly peaceful protest, which was truly just a violent series of incidents taking place all around the nation. And they lied about the true nature of them, which has put them into a very difficult position this time around because they can't really go out there and decry these kids or these adults from taking the exact same actions they took just 4 years ago. So they are panicking. President Trump leading in almost every, well, in every swing state is now going to be an even larger margin of victory because the people of America are just sick and tired of the antics of the radical left. They're sick and tired of the antics of the Democrats and the establishment vehicles that have been holding these people in some state of perpetual protection, because these people are being protected. These people are being provided funding. They're being allowed to go onto these campuses and just cause ultimate havoc. And Joe Biden, up until today, has said nothing about it. Well, that all changed earlier this morning. He delivered some unscheduled remarks on these protests that are taking place on college campuses. And we're going to go ahead and listen to it because it was a typical Biden address, basically slurring and having trouble reading the teleprompter. Let's go ahead and listen.
Before I head to North Carolina, I wanted to speak a few moments about what's going on our college campuses here. We've all seen the images, and they put to the test two fundamental American principles. Excuse me. The first is the right to free speech and for people to peacefully assemble and make their voices heard. The second is the rule of law. Both must be upheld. We are not an authoritarian nation where we silence people or squash dissent. The American people are heard. In fact, peaceful protest is in the best tradition of how Americans respond to consequential issues. But, neither are we a lawless country. We are a civil society, and order must prevail. Throughout our history, we've often faced moments like this because we are a big, diverse, free-thinking, and freedom-loving nation. In moments like this, there are always those who rush in to score political points. But this isn't a moment for politics. It's a moment for clarity. So let me be clear. Peaceful protest in America. Violent protest is not protected. Peaceful protest is. It's against the law when violence occurs. Destroying property is not a peaceful protest. It's against the law. Vandalism, trespassing, breaking windows, shutting down campuses, forcing the cancellation of classes and graduations. None of this is a peaceful protest. Threatening people, intimidating people, instilling fear in people is not peaceful protest.
So the most beautiful part about this is that what we're seeing is far less illegal than what we saw during the Summer of Love in 2020. And Joe Biden, along with every other Democrat stooge in America, looked us dead in the eye and pretended that the actions these kids and these adults were taking back in 2020 were protected by the rules of freedom of speech, when in fact it was absolute chaos. It was lawlessness. And now here we are today, and people expect these individuals to engage in at least the exact same type of behavior. And in certain places, it is approaching that. It has already gone past that. It's going to get worse. If they are allowed to stay out there and continue to control the campuses of these universities, mark my words, it will be just as damaging as the Summer of Love. The only difference is now, because Joe Biden is the one calling the shots, he's not going to be able to allow it to get as bad, and he's going to be forced to act. And at that time, it's going to be glorious.
Against the law, Dissent is essential to democracy, but dissent must never lead to disorder or to denying the rights of others so students can finish the semester and their college education. Look, it's basically a matter of fairness. It's a matter of what's right. There's the right to protest, but not the right to cause chaos. People have the right to get an education, the right to get a degree, the right to walk across the campus safely without fear of being attacked. But let's be clear about this as well. There should be no place on any campus, no place in America, for anti-Semitism or threats of violence against Jewish students. There is no place for hate speech or violence of any kind, whether it's anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, or discrimination against Arab Americans or Palestinian Americans.
But when it's against white people, it's totally permissible. Now, here's the thing. As a result of what has been happening on these campuses, Congress, well, the House, just passed an anti-Semitism bill earlier today, where they have now explicitly outlawed certain actions, certain speech. Let me go ahead and pull this up so that we can take a look at the specifics of this bill. Now, this is not law yet, but there is a distinct possibility it may become law when it heads to the Senate. There's also the distinct possibility that the Senate may refuse to pass it because it's going to specifically harm those so-called peaceful protesters who are now on college campuses all around the nation. Shucks. Hang on just a second. I had it, but now I lost it. Hold on. Let me, anti-Semitism. Maybe it was on Breitbart that I had it. Yeah, I think that it must be on Breitbart. Hold on just a second. They're also looking to use this as an opportunity to resettle Palestinians into America. And then, of course, that's going to remove them from Israel altogether. And that will be a problem that takes care of itself, apparently. Here we go. Okay, so let's go ahead and transition to this article. This is from Breitbart. So Mike Johnson spearheaded this anti-Semitism legislation. And normally, if this was any other time in history, this would have passed. It would have sailed right through. But Democrats apparently screwed it up for him. And a number of key Republicans have said, hey, this is, you know, this is now going to criminalize constitutionally protected speech, no matter how despicable it might be. So Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie, who had previously said that they were going to force the expulsion, they are also decrying this anti-Semitism legislation. It's called the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. It was introduced by Mike Lawler and Jared Moskowitz. They're both Republicans from New York and Florida. And it mandates that when the Department of Education enforces federal anti-discrimination laws, it uses a definition of anti-Semitism that's put forth in the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. Now, most House members would agree that anti-Semitism is bad, but this was put together a little hastily, and it's not as popular as it maybe would have been. So the vote was 320 to 91. 70 Democrats and 21 Republicans voted against it. Marjorie Taylor Greene did oppose it. She said it would convict Christians of anti-Semitism for believing the gospel that says that Jesus was handed over to Herod to be crucified by the Jews. It actually says you're not allowed to use these popular anti-Semitic tropes, such as Jesus was killed by the Jews. Now, you know, I mean, doesn't mean that, you guys know exactly what it's talking about, but other Republicans opposed this bill on the same grounds of what Marjorie Taylor Greene just said. So Johnson instructed his committee chairs to focus on combating anti-Semitism in the coming months. This is obviously a major pivot from the efforts to impeach Joe Biden. Now, Johnson was dealt another blow on the Mining Regulatory Clarity Act. Democrats were able to secure enough Republicans on a procedural vote to send that bill back to committee. And, of course, Johnson didn't get the passage that he was looking for. Hang on just a second. Let me find the actual quotes from this bill, because it is, gosh, I'm sorry, guys. I thought that I had it. Yeah, I guess I mean, I don't know what happened to it. Wait. No, that's not it. All right, I'll have to find it at a later time, and maybe we'll end up going over it tomorrow. But regardless of that, the same lawlessness that we saw yesterday that I mentioned earlier, I mean, it continues to happen. That protest at UCLA that I showed you yesterday that came to blows between the Israeli protesters and the pro-Palestinian protesters, it resulted in the police clearing them out and hundreds of those protesters getting arrested, same as they were in New York. So the police had to clear out this anti-Israeli encampment early this morning, and hundreds of these people were arrested. They had to remove the barricades. Kind of ironic that they built a wall, which is what we were trying to do at the southern border. And the officers moved in from both sides of the residence hall where they were stationed. There was a standoff overnight as the police got enough people together. And protesters attempted to resist by shining bright flashlights into the eyes of the officers. Several people were detained, and they were taken away with their hands tied behind their backs in zip ties. Now, there was another article that I had that was, Mayor Adams discussing the fact that many of these people were not even students at the university. You know what? Here is that anti-Semitism bill. And apparently that's not it either. Wow, I'm a mess today, guys. I apologize. I didn't have as much time to get ready because of taking it back. Gosh, I don't know where the Eric Adams thing is either. But regardless, Eric Adams discussing the fact that many of these protesters were paid, just as President Trump said. They weren't students at the university. The funny part was that he said, you know, extremism has come to New York, as if extremism hasn't been present in New York for a very long time at this point. Real quick, thank you very much to who cares? Thank you again. Thank you to the Steel Monkey, who says it smells like the clowns work at the CIA. Thank you to PQuest for 3 cookies. Thank you to Liberty Bells, who says, awesome show, Zach. Take care of that wrist. Doctor recommend I wear a brace at night. Much love. God bless. I think I might have to. And I know part of it is like my hands being on the desk and typing and, you know, using my trackpad. Thank you to EO2 Dave for a can and then another can. He says, democracy is like 2 wolves and a sheep deciding what's for dinner. Yes, it is. And then Judy the Lady Pug, thank you for the cookie. Appreciate you that. All right. And thank you very much to the people watching over there on Twitter and also over there on Getter. Appreciate you guys. If you're over here on Rumble, let me just once again ask the 3,900 people who are in the audience to hit that like button. We've got 717 likes and 2 dislikes. I would like to get on the leaderboard. I would like for people to know that my channel is worth watching and worth supporting. I need the support. Thank you very much if you have supported the show in any way. Continuing on here, Joe Biden made a speech today calling a staunch ally of the United States a xenophobic nation for not wanting mass immigration. That nation was Japan. Japan is famous for being one of the most homogeneous ethnic groups in the world. They have been very, very clear for the majority of their existence that they're an insular society. They're not real big on people coming in and setting up shop. The laws on immigration into Japan are extremely strict. And as a result, they have a very stable and prosperous society. But Joe Biden thought that it was time to make another diplomatic gaffe and claim that Japan was bad because they don't welcome immigrants. He said, this is not something that is relegated only to Japan, but Japan is clearly a Western nation, and they've been very successful with their policies. The entire Asian world, is pretty much like this. Their levels of immigration, are kind of relegated strictly within the Asian communities. There are a lot of small American expat communities, and obviously people do immigrate to Japan, but by and large, they are very racially and ethnically homogenous. He said, think about it. Why is China stalling so bad economically? Why is Japan having trouble? Why is Russia? Because they're xenophobic, he said. They don't want immigrants. Now, what's interesting is that Russia has gotten more and more strict on immigration, and especially after the events that took place at that concert hall, they have basically put a stop on immigration entirely because they know that it's a bad move for the citizens of their country. I would argue that the United States is failing because of the lawless immigration that has been allowed. The success that the United States has had in terms of economics has not been equally distributed throughout the citizens of this nation. Largely, it's been a net negative for the United States to have all of these immigrants come into our country. You can look back throughout the history of our nation, and certain waves of immigration have been a net positive, but when they started pushing for third world immigration, and immigration of peoples who had cultures that were just wildly different from our Western culture, our Christian Judeo-linked culture, it became a much, much larger problem. Certainly, we didn't have any radical Islamic terrorism before we started allowing radical Islamists to come into the country and then also going into their nations and blowing them up. We didn't have problems putting our people to work until we started importing third world peoples that were willing to work for a lot less money. And, you know, it says nothing about monetary policy or anything like that. But the Japanese government has not responded to Joe Biden's comments, but I think that it's probably pretty likely that they're not too happy about them. Relations with China and Russia are pretty low right now, but Japan has been a major ally of the United States in a number of different ways. I mean, in terms of trade, in terms of security matters, you know, economically, we're fairly closely aligned with them. Now, Japan's low immigration rates are due, as I said, to cultural homogeneity. They have a preference for domestic labor. They want to hire their own citizens. And as I also said, their policies on immigration being able to come in there are fairly strict. One thing that's really interesting, and it's kind of a unique phenomenon that I just learned about very recently, and I thought about you, Vector, because a lot of Australians are moving there. You can buy a house in Japan for like $10,000 American. You might have to throw another $30,000 or $40,000 into it to fix it up, but then you've got a house that might be worth, you know, $500,000 to $1 million if you were living here in the United States or perhaps over there in Australia. You can get really, really good deals on property. There's this phenomenon in Japan where children of people who have homes that are passed down, they look on those homes as a burden because they don't want to have to put money into fixing it up. You know, houses are traditionally, when they're given away or passed down in wills and stuff like that, usually the property is the valuable portion. They'll tear down that house and then they'll build another house. They like the idea of new homes. They don't like the idea of old homes, which I just think is kind of strange. I mean, here in America, you know, I mean, the average lifespan of a home is like twice the lifespan of a home in Japan. So you've got a lot of Australian people who are going there, sometimes getting properties for free or just, you know, very, very low prices. They put some money into it and then they fix it up. But the only thing is they don't automatically get citizenship or anything like that. There's strict laws. They might not be able to stay there the entire portion of the year. But it is an opportunity for people to kind of get a slice of the American or even the Australian dream that perhaps they wouldn't be able to afford otherwise. And the Japanese countryside is beautiful. There is a glut of homes in the Japanese countryside because everybody moves to the city. Personally, I don't want to live in a giant super city like Tokyo where, you know, you've got like 10,000 people crossing the street at the exact same time. Or any number of weird things happening. I would love to live out in the Japanese countryside, but, you know, I don't know Japanese, so I'm probably not going to move there. Yeah, be more. Old homes in America, at least, are built much, much stronger. In Japan, it's different because they don't care about keeping their homes for a long time. You know, they got paper walls and stuff like that. I mean... and in Shogun, I just watched the series Shogun. It was really, really good. I don't often recommend television shows to you guys, but if you've got some time, definitely check it out. You know, the philosophy is that, they don't build their homes with super durable materials because it could essentially be wiped off the map at any moment, and they want to use the material that they have, which is cheap and easily disposable, so that if they do have to rebuild, they can do it, and then they're not going to feel too bad about it. I just bought a 2024 Hachikuru. I love Japanese culture. Shogun was amazing. Thank you, Kick Dreaming. Yeah, I really, really liked it. Old Saucy says you're not factoring in Godzilla. I am definitely not factoring in Godzilla. I'm also a fan of the Godzilla movies. But I'm not a fan of the new American Godzilla movies. I thought they were kind of stupid. All right, so... The other part about Japanese homes being available is that they have a dangerously low birth rate right now, the same as we do here in the United States. Now, if they don't fix that birth rate problem, they may have to start allowing for mass immigration to come on in. I mean, certainly right now the housing that's available that's empty, I mean, that's causing a problem for people already. Now, Serter says they make their buildings like Lincoln Logs too. Yes. Yes, they do. And, you know, when it comes to like the cities, their skyscrapers and stuff or their buildings, you know, that are would normally be pretty durable. They put them on these like earthquake foundations so that the buildings themselves will like wiggle and move around. I'm fascinated with engineering and the processes they use to make sure that they can withstand the forces of earthquakes. And you know, I'm fascinated by earthquakes as well, just because I've always lived in an area that didn't have them. So maybe we can give some of our illegal citizens, well, not citizens, I'm sorry, give some of our illegal stock, because they're not citizens, to Japan. If they need to fix their birth rate, we can allow those people to move there. That's assuming that their countries are not going to want to take them back. But I think we need to. You know, what's very interesting to me is that, you know, for years we've been talking about the dangers of mass migration into Europe. Some of those European countries now are taking refugees who are not really refugees, and they're sending them back to, like, camps in their home countries. I guess Africa is, and obviously that's a continent. There's a number of countries in Africa, but I don't remember which country it was. They've got, like, migrant refugee resettlement camps. So if you are denied refugee status or you overstay your welcome in, say, like France or something like that, they're going to ship you over to one of those camps in Africa and just, you know, you're going to have to fend for yourself, figure it out, which I think is a great idea. I think that we're going to have to come up with a brilliant and orchestrated plan once Donald Trump returns to the office of the president so that we can immediately begin the process of resettling these illegals that have set up shop as a result of Joe Biden. But I think Donald Trump's smart. I think he's probably already working on that. All right, so this is the last story about the protesters. I mentioned, or maybe I didn't mention to you yesterday, but I know I talked to Brad about it. The protesters at Northwestern University in Chicago they were demanding free tuition for Palestinian students, and the university capitulated. They said yes, and they have pledged to give full-ride scholarships to the Palestinians. They've also pledged to hire Palestinian administrators and educators. that's going to be a problem at a certain point because there's only so many jobs to go around. And obviously there's only so many spots within the school. So if they're just giving a bunch of free rides to Palestinian students, what does that mean for the American students who would like to go there? I would suggest that maybe, you know, you shouldn't go to Northwestern. Maybe you should just go someplace else where you're not going to have to worry about not making the cut because your skin isn't the right color or your parents didn't come from the right country. But Iran has announced a brand new initiative offering university scholarships to the students who have been expelled for their participation in these Palestinian student protests. I think that this is hilarious because if any of these students tried the same type of protesting that they've gotten away with here in the United States, the Iranian regime would likely gun them down in the middle of the street and just remove them from the equation. So their mullahs, their Islamic region, is offering a lifeline to students who have been expelled from American universities as a participating factor in these protests. A lot of the students have been suspended, but they still may be expelled for the actions that they took, which extended beyond the boundaries of the First Amendment. Now, it's not only relegated here in the United States. These protests are also happening over in Europe. So this offer has now been extended to students in both in Europe and here in America. Some of those students who have been expelled, that includes the daughter of Representative Ilhan Omar. She's been suspended from Columbia for her role in organizing those demonstrations, and it's likely that she's going to be expelled. She appeared on a number of left-wing media outlets to discuss this, and on the state propaganda outlet Press TV, which is an arm of the Iranian regime. The head of an Iranian internationally renowned university has signaled his intention to offer scholarships to any students who are expelled. He is the head of Shiraz University. His name is Mohammad Moazeni. He announced that decision at a gathering of university students and professors of Shiraz. It's the capital city of the southern Iranian province of Fars, and he is doing this in solidarity with American and European students supporting Palestinians in this siege of Gaza. So Moazeni has criticized the harsh treatment of student protesters. Maybe he didn't actually see what was going on, but a lot of that harsh treatment was totally warranted. I haven't actually seen anything that I disagreed with. He said, "They exert a lot of violence in order to contain this raging movement and have even threatened to expel the students from universities and hinder their employment in the future. And such autocratic methods show the decline of global arrogance." Of course, they're going to jump all over any opportunity to speak badly about, you know, the great Satan, America. But after that, he announced that Shiraz University is going to be offering these scholarships to any of the students who were expelled from any of these universities. Students and even professors who have been expelled or threatened with expulsion can continue their studies at Shiraz, and I think that the other universities in Shiraz as well, in Fars province, are also prepared to provide the same conditions. Now, again, you have a bunch of non-binary and, you know, just totally Fruit Loops American protesters who are going to end up in Iran and imagine that they're going to have some sort of a better life there. I hope that they go because they're going to be up for a very rude awakening. I saw that picture the other day of these protesters that said, like, you know, Palestine is love or something like that, and all these rainbow flags. When was the last time you guys saw a rainbow flag that were flying in Iran? Let's just go ahead and see if we can find one. Iran... Well, actually, let's just see. Iran, let's see, attitude on LGBT. Let's see. Let's see. Cause I don't think it's, look at this. Fact sheet. LGBT community in Iran faces deadly violence and severe rights abuses. Look at this. Iran is one of only six countries that imposes the death penalty for same-sex relations. Please go. The death penalty can and has been applied to juvenile LGBTQ individuals. Flogging and imprisonment are also imposed for many same-sex acts and for cross-dressing. Activists are convicted of national security crimes for peaceful LGBTQ advocacy. Honor killings by LGBTQ family members are encouraged by lenient laws. 77% of LGBTQ people surveyed in Iran reported experiencing violence in homes and communities. LGBTQ children are unprotected from violence and frequently expelled from homes and schools. Any LGBTQ-related online content posted or shared is punishable by prison and flogging. Colorist 68 says, hi, Zach, did you see the Jewish college that got overwhelmed with applications? They had to find another building and are not turning any Jewish kids away. My client shared this with me today. No, I did not, but I think that that is great. I think that we have a division that is growing here in this country. And the fact of the matter is that certain groups are being explicitly discriminated against. And they've the left has put themselves into this very awkward position where they have used Jewish people as this sort of shield to attack anyone who disagrees with their beliefs. And the same with the LGBTQ community. You know, they've had like, you know, Jews and gays in, you know, in each hand and saying, you know, you're either a bigot or you're a racist or you're an anti-Semite or you're anti-trans. And now it's like, you know, you have this like perfect confluence of crazy things happening. And I think that the left is literally freaking out and saying, you know, I don't know what the hell to do. How do we talk about this stuff? Because they simply can't. Serdar says they get free helicopter rides in Iran if they want back. That's the truth. They definitely get free helicopter rides. And it's a one-way ticket out the door of that helicopter. So they are frequently forced to undergo dangerous conversion therapy to cure them of their disorder. That includes electric shock therapy, psychoactive drugs, sterilization, and shaming. The UN has stated this is tantamount to torture. I mean, I agree. It sounds just like it. If they're not cured, they are pressured to undergo sex reassignment surgery. This is the weird thing about Iran. They are totally against gays and any gay behavior. But if you are gay, they force you to become transgender. So they have to undergo the sex reassignment surgery or they are going to be prosecuted under the national security laws. And, you know, that's also got to be devastating to people. I mean, like, you can be gay and not be trans, but imagine being forced into undergoing some just drastic surgeries and then having to live like that for the rest of your life. That is horrible. So this is about Iran's new president. Homosexuality is nothing but savagery, he said. So clearly, I don't think the Iranian fabric is going to be too welcoming to a good number of these protesters. And I clearly do not see very many of them actually taking up the Iranian regime on that. Utah money mover, you don't think I'm gorgeous? Believe me, I wouldn't expect you to think that I'm gorgeous. It's a uniquely personal perspective coming from my lovely fiance. Mr. Anderson Lives says Mexico has got to be almost empty. Let's move there. How funny would that be? You know, I mean, the Mexican border is practically begging for people to come move down there now. All right. So Senator John Kennedy, before we take off, you guys, I did want to bring you this one last story, because John Kennedy is always great for a soundbite. He was questioning a climate change professor over some vulgar posts which support the far left agenda. As he was in Congress, he was asking him questions about it. And his display of these talents that he normally is able to demonstrate was in perfect form. Let's go ahead and watch the clip here.
May I please see the documents?
Yes, sir, and the witnesses' documents there.
May I please point out that this form?
The senator's time has expired, and there are other senators waiting.
I've got a bunch more tweets. Thank you for your objective advice.
I'm sure you
Doc.
Do. You can make put them into a question for the record, and
yes, I'd like to submit all of the good doctor's objective tweets and scientific analysis for the record.
That will be done without objection. Senator Merkley.
May I clarify one final point?
Proceed.
These are not my tweets. These are retweets. It's an important contradiction.
Oh, you often retweet stuff you don't support? Is that what you're telling me, Doc?
I did not say that I don't support this. I simply did not tweet it, which, as you were alleging.
But you retweeted it.
I'd like to make very clear that this form of character assassination is characteristic of the propaganda techniques.
You retweeted
it. Senator Merkley.
Didn't you?
Thank you.
Are you going to call me a sick fuck?
It's Senator Merkley's time.
So, here's the thing. You have every right in the world to post what you want or repost what you want, but I don't ever see people reposting something that they don't agree with unless there is some explicit notice on that tweet saying that you disagree with it. But that's exactly what happened, and it was a bunch of vile statements made by people on the left calling for violence or defaming people who don't believe in climate change. I've seen a lot of really unhinged takes lately from people on the left, and this is just more of the same. So I encourage them to keep it up because they are the architect of their own demise, and the more people that they turn off and push to the right, the more assurances we have that Donald J. Trump will, in fact, win this election come November. All right, you guys. So, yeah, his voting record is not great, Boreen Jane, but I really do appreciate his caustic wit in Congress. Norwegian Wood says, F Joe Biden. And Judy the Lady Pug says, I saw him in person. He is gorgeous. Are you talking about me? Thank you, Judy. Thank you. To all the ladies in the audience, thank you very much. Appreciate you. All right, you guys, we're going to go ahead and call it there. Thank you for hanging out with us today. I will be back tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday, so I'll be back at 9 p.m. As I said, my daughter arrives early tomorrow morning, so no afternoon show. Got a couple of extra shows that will be coming out next week, though, so keep your eyes peeled. I'll let you know here on the air when they're going to air. Until tomorrow at 9, good luck. God bless. Hit that like button. Hit the red pill. Tap the screen if there is hearts that are going to show up. Do something to help me help you get this information out there. Peace.